Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Civil Rights and Employment Action Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On April 24, 2013, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center v. Nassar. The question in the case is whether the retaliation provision of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, 42 U.S.C. Section 2000E, and similarly worded statutes, require a plaintiff to prove but-for causation, i.e. that an employer would not have taken an adverse employment action but for an improper motive, or instead require only proof that the employer had a mixed motive, i.e. that an improper motive was one of the multiple reasons for the employment action. To discuss the case, we have Charles Shaner, who is a professor of law at Emory University School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Shaner.
University of Texas Southwest Medical Center v. Nassar is a case that lies at the intersection of two conflicting streams of Supreme Court employment cases. One stream gives employee-friendly readings to allow retaliation actions even in the face of statutory silence. The other stream provides employer-friendly readings of what it takes to prove that adverse action was taken because of a protected status. Here are the facts. Dr. Niall Nassar, a doctor of Middle Eastern descent, became an assistant professor of internal medicine and infectious diseases at the University of Texas Southwest and associate medical director of the University of Texas Southwest Clinic in 2001. His immediate supervisor at the clinic was Dr. Philip Keiser, whose superior was Dr. Beth Levine. Levine, hired in 2004, immediately began inquiring into Nassar's productivity and billing practices. In 2005, after interviewing a candidate of Middle Eastern descent, Levine stated in Nassar's presence, "Middle Easterners are lazy." 2 years later, in 2006, Keiser informed Nassar of another similar comment and told Nassar that Levine scrutinized his productivity more than any other doctor. After Nassar applied for a promotion that Levine undermined, Nassar resigned from the University of Texas faculty, citing Levine's harassment in his resignation letter. Nassar later sued Texas Southwestern under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, arguing he had been constructively discharged and retaliated against. The trial judge gave the jury an instruction that Nassar did not have to prove retaliation was the only or critical motive for adverse action by University of Texas, but only that the medical center had acted at least in part to retaliate. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit held there was sufficient evidence to support the jury's finding on the retaliation claim, though six judges voted in favor of rehearing in bank. The Supreme Court granted cert for this question. The question is, does the retaliation provision of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 require a plaintiff to prove that but for an improper motive, an employer would not have taken an action? Or does the provision merely require that one of several motives the employer had for taking an action was improper? This is a statutory construction case, so we need to be very clear about what the words of the statute say. First, Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 makes it an unlawful employment practice to discriminate against an individual because of the person's race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. Second, Title VII separately makes it unlawful to discriminate against an individual because the individual complained about, opposed, or participated in a proceeding about prohibited discrimination. Following a fractured 1989 Supreme Court opinion in Price Waterhouse v. Hopkins, interpreting the words discriminate because of sex, Congress amended Title VII in 1991. This amendment, Section 703M of the statute, said that except where otherwise provided, an unlawful employment practice is established when the complaining party demonstrates that race, color, religion, sex, or national origin was a motivating factor for any employment practice, even though other factors also motivated the practice. In cases where this provision applies, the causation requirement is lowered. Subsequent to this amendment, in Desert Palace v. Costa, the Supreme Court held that where 703M is applicable, it replaces the Price Waterhouse standard. But then, in an ADEA case, Gross v. FLB Financial Services, the court held a plaintiff claiming age discrimination has to show, but for the age discrimination, he would not have been adversely treated by his employer. The reasoning was that, since 703M does not affect ADEA cases, Congress using the words because of meant the plaintiff had to prove but for discrimination. There's a statutory language controversy in this case. Nassar argues that the motivating factor standard applies not only to his national origin discrimination claim, but also his retaliation claim. Texas Southwestern says but for or sole factor causation is the standard for the claim. Nassar argues the retaliation is an employment practice within 703M. Retaliation for complaining of national origin discrimination is discrimination motivated by national origin. Conversely, Texas Southwestern argues the retaliation claims may be wholly separate from the underlying alleged national origin discrimination. Someone may be adversely treated for contentious opposition to the employer, the reasons for which are disputed, or because of his participation in an EEO process, the merits of which are disputed, without regard to the national origin claim. Nassar's argument would establish a broad, unitary, motivating factor standard for all Title VII claims, where the employer had more than one motive for its adverse decision. Texas Southwestern's argument would narrowly construe the cases in which the motivating factor standard could be used, leaving the residual but-for standard applicable to Title VII retaliation claims. This would make Title VII retaliation claims consistent with the standard of causation under the ADEA and many other employment statutes. The case law, of course, goes two different ways, as I mentioned before. In a 2008 case, Gomez-Perez v. Potter, the Supreme Court broadly construed retaliation claims to exist even where there was statutory silence. But in 2009, the Gross case under the ADEA prohibited discrimination because of age, and the plaintiff had to prove age was the but-for cause of the adverse action. Essentially, the argument boils down to whether, when Congress made motivating factor the standard for race, color, sex, religion, or national origin discrimination, but didn't explicitly use that standard for retaliation claims, should but-for discrimination be the standard, or perhaps the confusing Price Waterhouse standard should be used? Texas Southwestern argues if you include one, you exclude the other. Nassar, supported by the United States, says that when Congress spoke in 703M of any employment practice taken for prohibited reasons, it included retaliation. Had it desired, said the United States, Congress could have amended Section 703 only, rather than referencing any employment action, thereby including retaliation, which is in Section 704 of the statute. There are some consequentialist and policy arguments at issue here. Retaliation claims already win many times when the underlying race, sex, religion, or national origin claim fails. How come? Because the plaintiff merely needs to show that an adverse action was taken against him after his opposition or participation, regardless of the merits of his original claim. Plaintiffs, if the motivating factor standard prevails, would have an even easier time of proving the most common Title VII claims made today, which are retaliation claims. Conversely, if the but-for standard is adopted, employers will say other legitimate reasons, not just the retaliation, led to adverse treatment of the plaintiff, so there was no but-for retaliation. Reading the tea leaves from the oral argument is interesting. Not surprisingly, the four liberal justices, Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan, at oral argument seemed to be concerned there would be two causation standards under Title VII if they accepted Texas Southwestern's theory. This, they seemed to be saying, would be confusing and would make Title VII different from other federal employment law statutes, which do have a unitary standard, For example, the ADEA does have a unitary standard, but for discrimination in retaliation as well as age discrimination cases. Conversely, the four conservative justices, Roberts, Alito, Scalia, and presumably Thomas, though he asked no questions here, focused on the language of 703M and its failure to specifically reference retaliation. If that causes confusion, that's an issue, say the conservatives, that should be directed to Congress. The median justice, Kennedy, raised questions that make it likely he will, as he did in Gross, side with the conservatives. He seemed to be worried that retaliation cases are already easy to win and that it would stimulate litigation over retaliation even where there had been no adverse action taken against anyone based on race, color, sex, religion, or national origin. So I think it's likely that we'll have a 5-4 outcome from the oral argument, but as we all know, oral arguments don't necessarily signal the outcome or decision in particular Supreme Court cases. If that happens, it shows, I suspect, that the court has moved just slightly to the right when Justice Alito replaced Justice O'Connor. And that is it for Southwest Texas Medical Center versus Nassar.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.